U.S. factory activity slowed amid a fall in new orders.
Based on hitting a shareholder value. As market capitalization raises, he won't get
any. A lot more global, so creating more programming not only for, you know, us here in the English-speaking U.S., but elsewhere as well.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, and 720 WGN.
720 WGN, Steve Bertrand out today. He's packing for England, and John Hansen here filling in until 1 o'clock. And by the way, I wanted to mention you can, of course, hear The Verdict live from the Van Dyke trial on WGN Radio, followed by legal analysis and reaction from community leaders throughout the day. And Kim will obviously chime in at any moment, whatever we hear, anything. Switching gears just a little bit towards the Wintrust Business Lunch. Of course, the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, here on 720 WGN. And Ben Meyerson joins us. Ben, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you, John?
How's the kid?
Kid's doing great.
And you represent, of course, you're here through Blue Sky Innovation. You got some great stories to chat through. And really the big one, this is news that has been kind of a brew in the last day or so. The idea that China has inserted surveillance microchips in servers used by Amazon, Apple, and really obviously has a lot of people up in a tizzy, to say the least.
Yes. There's obviously quite a large war going on between the U.S. and China over technology things. And this really was a bombshell that Bloomberg dropped yesterday. Clearly been reported very thoroughly. The idea that everybody knows China is making an insane amount of American technology. But the report is that on very specific things, on the servers that run things like the Department of Defense, Amazon, Apple, Chinese contractors have put a very teeny tiny small little chip on the inside those servers that is able to then essentially hack from within.
When you say server, so I guess what I'm asking is, on my personal laptop, on my phone, are we talking about something in those, or are we talking about in bigger products that manage the technology on a grander scale?
Yes, you've got it right there. So when you log on to iCloud, Gmail, things like that, major online operations, like the backbone of the web, those aren't run on regular laptops. Those are run on big clusters of a bunch of computers that are stuck together that are designed to process lots and lots of information at once. And that's what, again, big companies rely on and the government relies on to do things like drone warfare, for everything from that back down to Amazon running a lot of the backbone of websites across the world.
Do we know if this attack is coordinated on consumers, general Americans as a whole, or are they going after defense contracts, people in the military, in the government, or do we not know?
It's really unclear what, if anything, has been stolen. It's really just more the revelation that this is out there, a hardware hack, which is extremely rare. There was a quote in the original story here by Bloomberg that referred to it as actually seeing one of the wild as like a unit. Unicorns, because it's so hard to pull off putting something inside a computer that somebody else is making.
I imagine that raises a lot of questions on what sort of quality control checks are being done when these products come from overseas. Do we have the technology to be able to scope these things out? Obviously, that'll be the reaction after we move forward and determine whether the story is true to the entire scope of it.
Yes, allegedly, Amazon, according to the Bloomberg story, and there's I should say that this talks about Apple and Amazon being infiltrated here. Mm-hmm. Apple and Amazon have both put what you might call non-denial denials out. Mm-hmm. Amazon's is very much a non-denial denial that kind of plays around the edges. Apple kind of went a little harder at it. It's like, no, we have nothing to do with this, despite their reporting in the original story saying four senior Apple executives confirmed that this was the case. But in terms of, it's just really, no one's really quite sure what has been stolen, but just the fact that this is going on and the U.S. government and these companies have been investigating it since 2015 shows that there seems to be something here.
This is obviously part of a broader issue with, and certainly the Trump administration has come forward, and Mike Pence delivered an important speech about China is infiltrating the elections. They do not want a President Trump moving forward. And it's interesting that 17 U.S. officials confirmed this story, and the White House, the administration, kind of used this as a story to make their point about the trade, or not about the trade war, but also the war against President Trump from China.
Yeah, this is not the last we're going to hear about this, but this is definitely a bombshell that's going to affect the way that a lot of companies operate and the way that cybersecurity operates.
All right, let's change gears locally. Chicago area Walgreens, of course, based out of Deerfield. They're going to be having a little section of their store. They're well known for their beauty products. Lots of people buy their beauty products at Walgreens. I know I do for my morning TV appearances, of course. But Birchbox is a Explain what Birchbox is as of right now.
So Birchbox is a startup that that sends you essentially a box every month to your house of a variety of different beauty products. They've been around for quite some time, they've been part of this wave of subscription box startups that will send you something every month. You know,
whether it's razor blades or underwear, even has these subscription services.
Yep, clothing, underwear, you can subscribe to all kinds of things. As the models have kind of proliferated a bit over there.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't had as much growth as you might have expected. A lot of people are canceling their subscriptions because people are realizing maybe I don't need quite as much of this every month. So they've been looking for new revenue models. Meanwhile, retail beauty businesses have been on the rise in places like Walgreens, Target, all kinds of stores, as well as expansions of Sephora's, your Ulta, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely an area of opportunity for retailers. So Walgreens has struck up a partnership with Birchbox, where they're going to be putting Birchbox sections in certain Walgreens stores.
I feel like this is kind of a representation where we are in terms of the battle of brick and mortar versus online sales, that we saw a big wave of these subscription-based things. You mentioned the underwear, the clothing, the food, all these sorts of things. But there still is a value to the walking customer at a brick and mortar location. And I imagine this is an interesting partnership between the two before we see a full-out online service or where we buy everything online. This is kind of like halfway between the two of them.
Yeah, there's certain things that seem to still have an appeal for those who just want to walk in and take a look at something. Sometimes you want to do that, and makeup and beauty products tend to have that kind of thing where you want to hold it, you want to look at it. And I think that's what Walgreens is banking on.
Really quickly, the last story we're going to talk about is this company called Food-Ah, which I think is a great name. It's like they couldn't think of anything else, so they added an A on the end of food. But it's an interesting company that kind of pairs up restaurants with big office buildings to give them pop-up spaces to serve their food, right?
Yes. I don't know if you ever saw it when we were still at Tribune Tower before the companies moved out to their various new locations. The cafeteria, before the news operations moved out of that building, the cafeteria was run by Food-Ah. Basically, they'll just bring in a rotating restaurant every day for lunch. It could be tacos one day, could be Chinese food one day, and they've gotten a lot of office buildings and such to buy into this concept. So when you they've just announced that they're going to be expanding. They're hiring 175 people next year in Chicago, or mostly in Chicago.
And that doesn't sound like a lot, but that's a big addition to their current staff.
Yeah, they currently have about 320 employees, 160 in Chicago. So this is this is more than 50% more employees here.
Yeah, that's big for food. Okay, Ben, that's where we're going to stop there. But where can people find out more information about all these stories?
BlueSkyInnovation.com.
All right, have a good one. Thanks so much, Ben.
Thanks, John.
WGN, John Hansen here on the Wintrust Business Lunch, and for Steve Bertrand, who's packing for England. Joining me on the phone is Tom Gimbel, the CEO of LaSalle Network. Tom Gimbel, of course, every meeting here at WGN and my other employer is worthwhile and very invigorating, but I know a lot of listeners out there are maybe stuck in a meeting. Maybe they just got out of a Friday meeting that was 3 hours long, and they thought, what the heck was that all about? Tom, you're going to help us make our meetings better.
I do the best I can for you, John. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, good to chat with you, too, as well. All right, so is it up to the managers? Is it up to the employers? Is it a relationship between the both of them to set up a good meeting?
It's really the fact is, John, meetings have to happen. There has to be shared thought. There has to be contributions. And even more than anything, you have to have an emotional connection amongst people on a team. So the goal falls on the person who's running the meeting, and that's not always the manager.
Hmm.
So sometimes a manager can have a group of people, but a topic may be best to be led by another person on the team. And when the manager feels the responsibility to always be the alpha in the meeting, that's not always the best strategy.
Yeah. So is it a matter of, I think part of it is managing expectations about what the meeting's going to be and kind of staying within the parameters. And I know that sounds uncreative, but I think that helps with focus. Would you agree?
It does, up until a point. And so if it's a regular meeting if you have a meeting about a certain topic and it's a one-off, people may be more interested because it's not something they've talked about before. If you have a weekly or a semi-monthly meeting that happens, obviously it happens on a regular basis, it can be the same information and get redundant. So the question is, how do you keep those meetings fresh? And then you have to add a little creativity. You have to get people to contribute. You have to figure out how to get one person interested in what another person has to say.
One of my biggest concerns with meetings all the time is not the frequency of them or the length of them, although those can be an issue. It's sometimes that not everyone that's in the room needs to be there. Do you think it's important to identify the right people for the right meetings?
Yes. And no.
Okay.
Meaning that to have somebody there and not explain to them why they're there, that's a problem. Sometimes, what I always call it is shared experiences. So you may have somebody that the topic being discussed doesn't directly contribute to somebody else's group right now. But how do you know that that same experience that they're going through won't affect you a year from now or 6 months from now? Are we teaching people to grow and develop and have vision into the future? Are we only focused in meetings on what we need to do to get done today? And so it may be cross-functional, marketing in a meeting, and they're talking about a finance project. But one day, marketing may have similar issues that they're facing, and what they learned in that meeting can help. And if you don't teach that as a leader, people are missing out on opportunities.
I love the TV station I work for, we do these ideas meetings on Fridays. And look, some great ideas happen in the room, and we come up with some great creative content. And I feel like where we run short after a great meeting, and this is no one's fault in particular, is just the execution of what happened in the meeting, the idea in the meeting. What do you say for right after the meeting for the game plan going forward to make sure that that good meeting translates into success?
That is 100% falls on the leader, the highest ranking person in the room. There has to be action steps. I always relate this to the in the movies and TV shows, John, where the teacher's teaching the class, the bell rings, and everybody runs out of the school, and they haven't given their homework assignment, right? You've got to know what time the meeting is stopping. You've got to stop the meeting 10 to 15 minutes before that end time, and you've got to assign action steps and follow-up. You have to. If there are no action steps given, you are absolutely correct. You're losing somewhere between 30 and 50% the value of the meeting.
I also think, and this seems so silly this day and age, but, you know, with people, I find myself taking notes on my phone, and I feel like it distracts me more than anything. I feel like an old pad of paper is still a great resource in a meeting, but then at the end of the day, we all take different notes. I feel like it's important for at the end of it. Can someone just take all the notes and make sure that everyone gets them? Do you think that's important in a meeting?
It's funny. I was just at a group, and there was a white paper written, and it was taken out of a book from a thought leader in venture capital and private equity space, and they said that having people have their laptops open is still a distraction.
Yeah.
You can't guarantee that everybody, depending on the size of the meeting, doesn't have an email open, doesn't have another window open that they're looking, and it is a distraction. And if you're typing away, the keys affect somebody versus actually just taking notes. The contrary point, John, is yes, one person being the scribe does work and it's effective. However, there's something about writing down your own notes and how you perceive the meeting to have gone and what was relayed that's very effective.
Interesting.
We all interpret things different, right? There's a car accident and we're all on different corners of the street.
We'll have different views.
We all see it a different perspective, yeah. And it's the same thing in a meeting.
Well, you're giving us a lot of food for thought for the weekend here, and here's to cheers to better meetings, Tom.
Well, and I'm sure I'll see you. I don't think either one of us is running the marathon, are we, John?
No. How do you know that, Tom? That's okay, anyways. Tom Gimbel, the CEO of LaSalle Network. Tom, thanks for your time. We really appreciate it.
Take care, buddy.
WGN 720 WGN, this is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, here on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand is out. He's packing for England. John Hansen filling in. Okay, so we got some good unemployment news. Personal income is starting to rise ever so, and that's a lot of time where I think people start to think, oh, things are great in the economy. I don't need a financial planner. I got it all taken care of. Maybe that's me saying that, but here to help me see the error of my ways, perhaps, is Ed Jurchen. He's the chair of the Financial Planning Association Conference. Ed, thanks for joining us here today.
John, thanks for having me.
Is that true? Do people make a few less phone calls than they they should to financial planners during the good times.
It seems counterintuitive, but when the markets are doing well and people are well employed, they don't think about the downside. Retirement is on track. So, yeah, it's a quiet period for us now. And, you know, we're waiting for a little volatility to come around.
One of our great sponsors is PermaSeal, and they often say, you don't want to call us when it's raining. You want to call us when it's great outside. It's sort of the same thing. Okay, so you have the annual conference. It was in Nashville last year. It's in Chicago this year. Give us the specs. What's the conference all about?
Well, it's about the global gathering. It's the largest global gathering of certified financial planners on the planet. It's 2,000 people from the U.S. and 13 other countries. It's a great opportunity to connect and then ultimately learn the craft of being a financial planner and how that ultimately helps our constituents and your listeners.
See, when I picture this, I picture 2,000 great men and women, many of them dressed very professionally, and I imagine some of our listeners driving around might say, what does it matter that they're having a conference? Why are we talking to this? How does this impact everyday folks out there that that might need a financial planner down the road?
It's a great question. And so what people often confuse with, if they go in to go see an advisor, let's say, they're thinking, oh, can I have a plan? And what they're actually getting is investment advice and not necessarily comprehensive financial advice.
What's the difference?
It's a great question. So it's investment advice is just about investments. What stock should I buy? What should my portfolio do? Most people who walk into our offices, it's the first thing that they're asking. They show us their statements and what do I do? And we sort of back up a little bit and say, your investments are important. That's your bag of money. But let's concentrate on your estate plan. Let's concentrate when things do go wrong. What do you have in place? So it's much more comprehensive in nature. Investments are important, but that's just one element to somebody's financial life.
So it's a zoom out lens in many ways. And I imagine that that's why the conference is important, because look, obviously as a financial planner, you have a broad range of skill sets. You understand the economy, whether it is investments, whether it's other things. But I imagine everyone has their strengths, and everyone talking to each other can help us all create better plans for ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, we closed the event out just a little bit ago, and we had Second City Works come in to teach our advisors how improv can help you with communication.
And how is that possible? How can that help a financial advisor? Is that why you loosened the tie, or you took the tie off, Ed, because Second City came on through?
It's exactly it. Basically, the biggest thing that they were trying to teach us, which is just invaluable, is to listen. Stop thinking and just listen and be present in the moment. And when we're talking to clients about their money and their hopes and their dreams, truly listening in an authentic way makes a big difference.
I mentioned part of the conference is trying to get you guys and gals, the 2,000 of you, to communicate better with everyone in the public about why they might need a financial planner. What were some of the messages about that, on how to get people to be a little bit more cognizant of their financial situation and to seek professional help?
Well, again, it's almost like physical health. People tend to seek us out when things go wrong. And it is sort of the Wild West, if you would, in the investment space. There's a lot of different regulations, a lot of different standards in terms of are you a fiduciary? Are you not a fiduciary? That might be some words that have been thrown out on the show. But ultimately, you want to have that person sitting across the table to have your best interest in heart, fully disclose fees and everything like that. And that is where that true relationship comes in. And that typically starts with a certified financial planner, shameless plug.
Mm-hmm.
But from that standpoint, that's a great starting point.
What is a certified financial planner? What does that mean? What sort of certification is that?
So the CFP Board of Standards has a certification because anybody today can call themselves a financial planner. You can go out and say, hey, I'm a financial planner. You know some
maybe
things.
I'm thinking about doing that today, then. You caught me.
You know some things,
hey,
about
John,
the markets.
Hey, John, can I interrupt you for just a second? Hey. It looks like we do have a verdict coming in the trial of Chicago police officer Jason Van Dyke. We are hearing multiple reports. The verdict will be read within the hour. We will carry it live. So stay tuned to 720 WGN. We will keep you posted.
Yeah, Kim, that's obviously huge news. Sorry to interrupt you there, Ed, but obviously big news coming there. Kim, obviously interrupt us again if we need to. But again, as you heard Kim just say, we do have a verdict coming in on this Friday afternoon, which of course has the whole city and really the whole area on pins and needles, both sides, obviously expecting, well, I don't know what to expect, obviously, but you can tell there's a sort of tension in the air, in the atmosphere around Chicago as we await this verdict, and Kim will give it to us. Ed, just last thought here about, you know, the conference, what your biggest takeaway from it was.
The biggest takeaway is community and what we do and how we really affect people. And in financial planning, you really can make a difference in people's lives. And I think that's the main key. It's not, again, just about the investments or portfolio. It's truly engaging and on an authentic level to individuals, which is truly transformational.
And how can someone find a CFP professional?
Well, they can go to plannersearch.org or cfp.net and seek themselves out a certified financial planner.
You're going to join an improv group now, Ed?
Absolutely, John.
All right, sounds good. Thanks so much for your time. Plenty more coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch. And, of course, as we mentioned, Kim will have that verdict. We'll have that verdict live here on WGN. A verdict has been, there is a verdict that's been announced. We obviously don't know what it is yet, but we will be covering it live. We're going to take a quick commercial break here on 720 WGN. WGN, John Hanson, in for Steve Bertrand on the Wintrust Business Lunch. And again, we'll have that verdict live coming up around 1:45 here on WGN Radio in the Jason Van Dyke trial. All right, Nancy Doyle, you're the founder of the Doyle Group. We've met before. It's so great to talk with you again. We met on TV on your last book, and now you have a new book out, Manage Your Financial Life, just starting out. Nancy, thanks for coming here today.
Well, nice to see you again, John. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and, you know, there is no more critical time. Obviously, financial planning and being aware of what your finances are important at any point in life. But in terms of ROI, a return on your investment, the most success or the most damage you could do to your financial future is right when you're starting out as an independent adult. And I imagine that's what the book is really aimed to help these people out.
That is what the purpose of the book is, because when you're just starting out, especially people coming out into the workforce nowadays, they do face some financial headwinds. If you think about it, you know, 70% of college students leave school with debt, and the balances are 70% higher than they were a decade ago.
Right.
And also, rents have been high in major metropolitan areas. Now, the last month or two, they've pulled back a little bit, but
the overall trend is still
exactly
up,
the overall trend has been rents have been rising faster than the CPI for quite a while now. So those are things that people just starting out need to face. But I believe that establishing those sound financial practices early on has a profound impact on your financial well-being in the long term.
We could go on and on about high school education in terms of how we educate our students. And I know there's a lot of personal economics departments that have been cut at high schools. And there are a lot of well-meaning teachers that do their best, parents too. But we're not doing a real great service for our high schoolers and even college students on this. Does this book help to fill the gap of that void?
I hope it does. I hope it does, because financial literacy is important for all of us, especially for those just starting out. And I think one thing we can all do that doesn't require a degree in business or economics, with technology nowadays, we can all analyze our spending like we never have been able to before. If you think about it, go to your bank website, look at your activity over a period of 3 months. You can identify changes that you can make to free up cash to save more. Same is true with your credit card. I do believe that if you limit the number of accounts you have, and I think you and I've talked about this before, limit yourself to one or two credit cards, because then you can really keep track of where your money's going. And I think it's those lifestyle choices, it's the non-essentials that the financial planners talk about. Those are the things that can get you into trouble.
A lot of our listeners are well beyond high school and college years, and they have kids, sometimes grandkids as well. And I think that, you know, when you become aware of what credit is and what rent is and how, when you become aware, you seem to forget that at some point in your life you didn't know that stuff. If you would have asked me as an 18-year-old what APR was, what the danger of not paying your full credit card bill off each month was, and I did well on my math ACT. I thought I knew. I don't think I'd be able to answer those questions. So to those listeners out there that say, I bet my kid knows, a lot of times they don't.
I believe that's true. I don't think they do know. And I think what, you know, we've all heard the good news. Now, today the market's not such good news.
Right.
But overall, if you think about it, unemployment, we just heard, is now at a 49-year low. Stock market continues to reach record levels. Consumer confidence is high. But what we're also seeing is household debt is also at record levels. We've now surpassed the level we were at in the third quarter of 2008, so the beginning of the global financial crisis. And we've seen 16 quarters of consecutive climbing in household debt outstanding.
What is household? Is that just the gross?
Household debt would be the combination of mortgage, which is the vast majority of it, home equity loans, student loans, which is an increasing part of it, and credit card debt and auto loans. And actually, student debt is a major factor for those just starting out. It's now larger in size in terms of relative to credit card debt or car loans outstanding.
You have a couple points here. We don't have time to get through all of them about what are in the book, and you should buy the book, Manage Your Financial Life, Just Starting Out. Where can people find the book, by the way?
They can find it at independent bookstores, Amazon, and also, you know, people can visit my website. I do a lot of writing and a lot of speaking at manageyourfinanciallife.com, and I'm also on Twitter at Nancy Finance.
You're all over the place.
I am all over the place.
So the one I wanted to focus on, you mentioned getting organized, which sounds simple, but of course it's important to read through and get the details, analyzing your profile, educating yourself about investing, credit, and debt. What do you mean by putting your money to work?
Putting your money to work is saving and investing. And there are three points that I think are essential for all of us as we think about retirement, especially those that are young. You have to save and invest every year. You can't take a year off. You can't put it off. Second, you have to be disciplined. Once you invest that money, you cannot touch it. And third, you really need to use realistic assumptions as you plan for retirement. You hear people talk about, you know, 8% returns, 7% returns, 9% returns. I'd say, you know what? Look for, as you plan, think about a 6% return after fees. Be conservative, because guess what? If you're wrong, you'll be ahead of where you thought you were going to be.
It's funny, because I like to look at my 401k, then I get out the old calculator, and I enter, sometimes some days I use 8.5%, yeah. Some 7, I just hit it 30 times and see where it's at. But yeah, 6% is probably a better, more conservative
6%
number.
6% after fees, and it's yeah. reasonable.
And the reason I wanted to highlight that point really quickly is just the idea that putting your money to work doesn't seem like something that someone who's not making a lot of money right out of college would do. But man, that's the time to do it with compounding interest. That's the
exactly.
time.
Exactly. And you, I walk through the math in the book, and it's also on my website. If you have a 45-year time horizon till retirement, and you put $4,500 away every year, you'll have $1 million by the time you retire. But the best part is the market does 80% of the work.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's incredible. And even if you're just starting out and you have to put in a little less amount, and I walk through another scenario where you can just ramp up to $4,800 a year.
Right.
If you can't start out at $4,500 year one, you can still get there. And again, the market's doing most of the work for you.
It's never fun playing catch up, is it?
No, it's not.
Nancy, good luck with the book. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Well,
we appreciate it.
Thanks for having me by.
Good to see you again.